So, we've just had the honor of a wonderful artist coming into our presence, Tony Martin, Anthony Martin. And we're, just to remind everybody, do you have to do a station?
I did
your station identification. Okay, so we know who we are, and we're legal for this next hour. And we are participating in the project Art Is, Speaking Portraits. Art is, poetry is, music is. Right now we're still in the Art Is phase of this, a project that's been going on for the last 10 years, and this is its first manifestation on radio. So you are, those of you who are listening are experiencing Art Is, in which I, George Quasha, ask artists to continue the sentence, Art Is. Not so much as a question that will engage our cognitive mind only and get us to frame art in terms of art history, which we can do, it's part of the picture, but to really try to go to that place in ourselves where it is most real to us and try to say what is most important about what art is to us as individual artists. This is an artist-made project, and it's only for artists. I don't ask in this project curators, historians, museum directors to tell me what art is. They have a lot of opportunity to tell us what art is, and artists occasionally also express their feelings about that or their thoughts about that, but actually far less than you would think. And when they do have an opportunity to speak, they speak about what it is that they do themselves, which is interesting and powerful to know. But I want to bring forward also the speculative part of our experience of art as artists that is concerned with the question of the nature of art, just as we are concerned with the nature of anything else, the nature of nature, the nature of mind, the nature of society, of good, of evil, of the divine or the non-divine, or whatever it is that we are concerned with the nature of. We are concerned with the nature of things as beings. That seems to be our characteristic. But I want to bring it out as an artist-centered inquiry, because my experience of having filmed now over 1,000 artists, poets, and composers in 11 countries and 21 languages is that there seems to be no end to the possibility of rethinking this and re-expressing this. And I'm not interested, really, in the five great generalizations that can come from this about what all the artists have said. I don't even register that. When people ask me that question, I don't know the answer to that question. And to me, if I did know the answer to it, I wouldn't tell you, because it would block the possibility of our rethinking this in a very radical way from the point of view of the singularity of each artist, what is true for each artist. So, I'm going to ask you to say your name for my videotape as well, which is happening here as well.
I'm Tony Martin, and at one time people called me Anthony. More and more, for some reason, I took that people like Tony, so I started to use Tony. I can begin anytime you would like me to begin.
Okay. Right. Tell us what kind of art, what you do as an artist, so that the people here who aren't familiar with your work can have some sense of you.
Well, I really have a dual path that for me is one thing. Mm-hmm. I'm very much a painter and a drawer, and I was a musician when I was a child. Mm-hmm. So I bring music to the visual and vice versa. That led me in the mid-60s to begin to do interactive art with people using viewer participation. Mm. And I worked with Anna Halperin a little bit. I made a piece where the people were a material of the piece. So, and I didn't want to control the people, so this was an interesting approach where I could make use of a viewer situation and welcome the individual viewer as a part of my art object. So that began very early in the early 60s, 61. So the painting continued, and I became a kind of a visual composer as well, because I used projection equipment to make visual compositions to go along with the music of Pauline Oliveros and Terry Riley and Mort Subotnick, Ramon Sender, and also blues people, Muddy Waters. I did a light show with Muddy Waters at the Fillmore West, and I used basically six projectors and filled 20 and 30 foot walls with a mostly abstract but also figural, layered, changing, always developing, always kind of visual music going through a dynamic changes. Very often a 16 or 18 minute piece would develop, and I would present those as works of art with sound, sometimes my own. At any rate, that's a little description of the the kind of widened field of visual applications. Mm-hmm. And so I still do both. I still make light performances. I make installations that are interactive with viewers. And I make paintings and drawings. So it's continued now for, you know, 50 years.
At what age did you begin making visual art?
I started making visual art at about 12, 13 years old, and I was playing classical guitar for some. I found there was a great teacher my parents found. So I was playing classical guitar and folk music because my parents both knew folk musicians. And Woody Guthrie played in our backyard. So, I mean, here I was an impressionable 8-year-old kid with a guitar. And then finally a pad and a pencil. So I was doing both drawing things. We made posters when we were, you know, 12 years old. It was part of the New Deal kind of environment that I grew up in the middle of New Jersey, a town where people were somewhat progressive, socially progressive people. So we were always making drawings of each other, and our parents were too. It was kind of a natural part of what happened. So it was early on that I began these, both music and drawing.
Wow. So you obviously have thought deeply about the question of what art is. I can see it in your face and I can hear it in your voice. So,
well, I either have felt and thought deeply about it or not at all, almost, because, you know, it's a very interesting opening up of a cosmos. So for me, I would say that that art is the highest form of communication. I've always felt that art, as I see it being art, has been the best kind of communication. When I feel it's the fullest and the most variable way that an individual can communicate to another individual. You can go beyond standard language. You can go way beyond standard and common usages of sound and words and indications and facial expressions, whatever can be used to communicate, and invent a language that you feel is going to communicate or join you up with another human being in a significant way. It's always been about a kind of combination. I love the word invent because it's invent. And for me, art is invent. And there's something about that that's always kind of rung true. Art can be everything, I feel, and art can be no thing. Silence, for instance, is clearly now people understand that silence can let you in. Silence can allow an individual to join with the world, the cosmos, another human being, a group. No thing can be the vehicle for that. And to me, that's wonderful. And I feel, because I felt that when I was a kid even, that somehow we could transmit to each other. I used to go out in the weeds and take sticks and weeds and make antenna and kinds of configuration sculptures, you know, and I would invent these kind of communications. For instance, with my brother who was back in the house, you know, I'd say, "Hey, Stefan, do you hear me?" You know, and you know, maybe I even conjured up yes. So anyway, inventing a way to communicate. To me, it's clearly that we can get involved. We can immerse ourselves in a lot of different kinds of communication. Craziness, you know, craziness or chaos. Very often with words, people are trying to organize their thinking to say, here is what is. And perhaps you want to deal with chaos and, all of the myriad inputs, our polysensory world, and you want to share that with somebody else. How are you going to do that? Well, this morning I saw a milkweed pod, three milkweed pods on each other with a leaf and the funny vine that's with them from the flower. Mm. And I thought, well, how would I relate this to another individual? And I thought, I'm not going to be able to describe it in words, and taking a picture isn't going to do it because that's just one eye, not two. I said, well, take a piece of paper and a pencil and draw it and give it to them, you know, whoever it is. Mm. You've communicated what you as an individual felt and saw in those, you know, milkweed pods to the other individual with their unique and common criteria. So it all joined up, you know, wonderful, you know. And I thought, well, you could sing this pod. Woo, woo, wow. Something like that. There's three milkweed pods. Wow. And, you know, so great. Why not do things that way and invent some languages? Also, I feel that art, as I'm defining it, can release the heart of it. That a language, it can be a language of the heart, not just the mind. And something about a language of the heart feels good to me, I guess, that that's possible, you know. And you can make language out of that. And you can morph things, you can change things. You don't have to deal with, quote, reality. You know, you can make a painting of a human being with rabbit ears very quickly. You know, 2 minutes, a human being with rabbit ears and a great big stomach with a house on the stomach. Mm. Okay, now how is she going to do that? And let's throw some, you know, pencil and paper, paint, or something like that. So anyway, for me, art is very much about joining. It's a joining place of uniqueness of individuals. And that's kind of a theme that has fed my interactive art. My installations are always based on that adjoining place where different kinds of human beings can share things with other different kinds of human beings and have some significant experience that way.
Wonderful. I mean, the notion of communication is an open question as to that, what that really amounts to, and what really is occurring when we speak of communication. Language is often not communication. Language is often the obstruction of communication or the control of communication. The notion that language is invented to communicate is a half truth at best. Language is really invented as much to control a situation or to make sure the other guy doesn't whack you in the head. And to be nice to him, when you say good morning, you're not really wishing the person anything at all, except you might be or you might not be, but it isn't necessarily a wish. It could be as much, I'm a good guy, don't hit me. how I hope this, we could get past each other without violence in many contexts. So.
I love all of those things, and I like in a piece sometimes to bring out those very things where it's, you're really not defining, you know, how communication can occur, but exploring it, not defining it, and I think that is part of what I would want to say, that for me it's about exploring, partly finding and seeking and finding, but or planting seeds and harvesting whatever from them between individuals. So that for me, communication, I guess, could mean, it's, I'm using it kind of broadly, basically, you know, where admitting that there are thousands of kinds of communication, but just saying that for me, the joining of the uniqueness in the common ground, you know, it's hard to find the appropriate words.
Commune is also a word, to commune. I mean, it's, the communication is, sometimes we use that word closer to, meaning something closer to communing with other people, to sharing some kind of a reality. It isn't as though I have something to say to you, and that therefore that is communication, but that we go somewhere together in what is happening between us.
Do you think? I like that notion. I like the nonverbal communication that occurs between people. My wife and I took a walk up in the meadows yesterday, and we said maybe two words in 45 minutes, but the communication or the bonding or the joining or whatever was a sharing of the experience. And we know we're very different from each other. And we know we also have common ground. So this is a good example of nonverbal communication. And I like that you brought up commune, communal. It's really, it's such a broad territory. I think it sometimes it finds itself at odds with the marketplace. And market-driven art is a whole other world than community-driven art or art that comes between or experience between two or three or four individuals who are not trying to buy or sell anything. And this is not to be at all analytical too much or critical. It's to say that there are parallel worlds in art, definitely. And at this point, I feel that the art world is many things. I feel that art is many things. And perhaps at one time you could see that art might have been, first of all, it's a word that was never used. Art is an invention of post-Renaissance, really, the word art. So what does it mean? It used to talk more about, these arenas talked about what you could do with something, like an instrument, you know, like a harpsichord or your voice or you know, could you shape gold, you know, you know, or could you carve rock? You know, that was more, I think, the kind of gestalt of it. But since we've got the word art, which I sort of like in a way, because it's a big, wide-open word, you know, it's a big, wide-open world with this crazy, you know, open-ended, you know, referential thing in it. So, but definitely, I do personally feel there's a kind of a parallel of worlds in art, and there's definitely also a parallel of art as commodity and art in the making of art. So these are parallel, and they cross over, of course. But I love seeing, it helps me, it helps me a lot to see that they basically are parallel tracks that do cross sometimes. And, I like this sort of thing that we're doing now because it's about the thing I'm talking about. So George and I, you know, who's George, you know, and who's Tony? And, and when I first started making interactive viewer participational situations, I think I was partly thinking like, what art thou? Who art thou? What art thou? What art me? You know, and somebody once said, "Everybody's a thy," and I like that. You know, I'm a thy, you're a thy, and thou art, and my art are somehow sacred. There's something wonderfully large about this that is beyond being a human being, even, you know, where you're part of a bigger picture. In other words, I don't mean to be complicated again, but just to somehow allow some kind of discourse with the bigger picture. And the bigger picture meaning the non-man-made, in my mind, the non-man-made. And we're made by the universe. We don't make ourselves. And I didn't make this, you know. I'm not really myself. You know. I am made by the universe. This is it. And then I work with it, you know, and I've been working with it for 70-some years. And great, you know, it's the vehicle. But I didn't make the vehicle. I didn't make this, you know. It's a bigger picture, and you can relate to the bigger picture. And two individuals relating to the bigger picture, that's nice, you know. That happens with Michelangelo. It happens in cave paintings. It happens in multimedia installations, you know, sometimes. So there's nothing new about it. You know. Tribal art is the first multimedia art, you know, where dance and painting the body and dance and singing and touching each other and smelling the fire and the incense is all one thing. That was the true multimedia, polysensory art right there, you know, 40,000 years ago. And I feel that what we're doing now is great, pretty much the same thing with a whole new set of wonderful gadgets and equipment. And we've extended our fingers, you know, into this wonderful world. But some of the roots are the same. And some of the results, I hope, some of the results are the same as well. You know?
It's very interesting that you point that out, because I mean, the way you're describing it makes me think of art as something that we create to surround ourselves with, to be in the midst of, to be in the process, in the flow of, in the inside of. We're going out there to make something we can go into.
Nice. Yeah, I think you're getting part of my personal feeling about that. And I think you're right. There's a kind of environmental thing about it for me. You know, not for everybody. Some people make an object, you know, right there, and that's it, sort of it. And that's great. That can be, I think, very high art. But for me, it's more, as you were saying, somehow it's more spherical where you're in. And it's not a sphere either, because it's permeable.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, where...
challenges our geometry to be able to say what it is we're inside of.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, Tony, this has been a very great pleasure. Thank you very much for coming in and doing this. Did we leave out anything that you wanted to say?
Let me see. I really don't think so. It's just that I think I touched on, at least I touched on most of the things. There's one other thing, I think. Yeah. If I moved from painting portraits, which I did once, to trying to make a portrait of the inner person.
Oh, yes. Wow.
You know, trying to make a portrait of the inner psychology of a person. Mm. The only way I could do that was to involve myself with new media. And so that is one additional thing I'd like to say, that I wanted to incorporate other viewers, as I said, and to have them interact with each other in order to have people presenting a portrait of their inner self in relation to your inner self. And I did this in reflective environments, semi-reflective environments, recorded with video and then projected, and choice making, so that a person could go under a red light and a red theme would occur, and another person thought, oh no, I want it green, goes under a green light, and the red and the green join up. So you're getting an inner portrait of the individual personality working with the inner portrait of another individual. And I think that's one additional thing I wanted
to say. It's a double surround.
And where the artist is not separated or above.
That's right, yeah.
A lot of, you know, some of the social artists now, like this Tino guy, starts with an S. I find that his social choreography is kind of wonderful in a way, but still, he is really the only recognized individual. So I thought, I was a little suspicious of that, just in terms of my own, you know, needs for what social, you know, art can be, or individual social art can be.
Doesn't commune.
Right. Well, it does. It does commune, but it's more like just looking at it, mm-hmm. and you choreograph it, and then you look at it.
Yeah.
Well, and to my mind, that's not real incorporation.
Right.
So it's, you know, when I don't, I like it when the artist is at the same level, horizontal, in a way.
Yeah.
The horizontal world of artists and viewers. So,
well,
thank you.
Thank
you,
George.
I want to thank you and Tom for the opportunity.
Great to see you, Tony.
Great.
We have to get together. We could continue this, I'm sure, but we have a little bit of a schedule here.
No, this is wonderful. And
let's get together soon.
Yeah. Great.
Thank you. That was Tony Martin.